Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Welcome to the Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, VJR Nathan, and joining us today is co-host Claire Van Winkle of Rockaway Writers Workshop.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, and featuring our guest, Finn Miller of Finn and His Rust Kickers.
Hey, how are you? Happy Labor Day.
Thank you. So Finn is Rust Kickers is a New York-based earth-shattering rock, punk, skrunk, country, ska, noise band. I love that. Featuring members of Erratic Sculpture and Pig Earth and the Skells. So that's a great combination of genres. So that might be a good place to start off with. And music and the influences, the different genres that your band exemplifies.
Well, you know, we all come from, there's four core members of the band and some floating members and stuff like that. And when I say floating, I really mean floating in some cases. But we all come from very different backgrounds, but we share a certain common overlap of various musics. And what that, I don't know, I guess that description could be sloppy punk. I don't know what it is. Yeah. But we come from, some of us from very precise kind of music backgrounds and others from messier. But messier seems to be the overlap, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
We're a messy bunch.
Can I ask you, as a writer, something that my students often ask me is, oh, what genre is this? Is this a poem? Is this a story? How important do you think it is to differentiate genre? And is there a difference in differentiating genre when you're a student learning versus when you're a musician playing?
Well, that's a good question. To understand, well, I think it's like anything. It's like if you're a painter, you want to study the history, study the styles, study all those different things, master some techniques before you find your own. And I think that in music, I mean, I worked in record stores when I was a kid. And the genre category of what's what, and so specific in some cases, always really annoyed me.
I like the miscellaneous.
Yeah, exactly. Miscellaneous is an excellent, one of my favorite categories. Unfortunately, I think sound effects usually wound up in that in a record store. But I think everything's miscellaneous. We jump across genres all the time. We will play a jazz song our own way. We'll play, you know, a standard our own way. We'll play punk songs our own way. I think that melding of breaking down of the barriers between the genres, what's considered the genre, is really crucial.
What about in your own training and your own growing up? What kind of music did you listen to, and what was kind of the evolution of your own musical background?
Well, we were just discussing some of this the other day, actually, with a couple of friends. And for my eighth birthday, and I'm 57 years old, so I'm a lot older than most of your listeners here, but maybe not for this time of day.
Yeah.
But for my eighth birthday, I took my birthday money and I bought two albums. And the first albums I bought, and when I say albums, I mean vinyl records, you know. And the record I went to buy was Sgt. Pepper, which was a couple of years old at that point. But, you know, I'm a little kid, and it was on the radio all the time, and that's what I purchased. Then I had some extra money, an extra $3 or so. That's how much music was then. Mm-hmm. And I bought a record in the local store. When I say it wasn't even a record store, it was like a Kmart kind of a place. It was a place called Billy Blake's out on Long Island, which was a chain which some of your listeners may be aware of. It was sort of like an everything kind of a store, but it had a record section. And I'm thumbing through, and of course I found the record with a nice yellow banana on the cover. And that was a mono version, which I had no idea what that meant, of course, at the time, of the Velvet Underground's first album. And so I hated the Velvet Underground record when I first put it on. I remember that distinctly because I put it on first when I came home. And I loved the Beatles record, obviously. And it took me a few years to love the Velvet Underground's record, Underground record. So I was listening to a very wide variety of musics, very young. Everything from, Dylan was ubiquitous at the time. Everything on the radio. But I would say that I opened up very early in my teen years to tons of world music, tons of jazz, tons of political music, tons of everything from folk to punk eventually.
Yeah.
And in my teen years, I would say, you know, teenager pretty cliche into a certain point where I was listening to, let's say, some Led Zeppelin, things like that. But as soon as the punk revolution arrived, I was hooked. And I was hooked to that creative urge, that creative edge. And it wasn't so much the sound. I mean, it was the sound, but it was more like, these guys can just do this.
Yeah.
That was the attitude.
It's interesting when we think about, from what I'm getting from what you're saying, is, you know, what we're drawn to in, through love, and also what we're repelled through hate. You know, it's interesting, like, things that, it's just a strong bond. It creates a strong bond between us and that music, you know, something that you don't like, something that we really like, you know?
Sure, yeah. As I just said, I still, you know, I still have that, you know, we all have our ties to our teenage music. So, I mean, I'll still listen to Led Zeppelin occasionally.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
even though it's sort of a guilty pleasure these days, if there's such a thing. So
also music that we used to love that we grow to suddenly resent, you know, is there anything
like absolutely. That? Oh, absolutely. Sure. You know, you know, I mean, I listened to bands. I mean, you talk about spinoffs of in the teenage years from, like, let's say, listening to Led Zeppelin. You listen to bands like, Blackmore's Rainbow or something like that, which is pretty much intolerable to me now.
Yeah.
So not to knock Ritchie Blackmore. Great guitar player. But, there's a whole bunch of things you grow out of.
Yeah,
so to speak. But some of those things that are similar to the things you grow out of, you're still tied to. The Sex Pistols were a big thing for me. The Ramones were a huge thing for me. The New York Dolls, which I came to kind of backwards because they were a little before my time, were a huge thing for me. And I latched onto this whole punk downtown New York City thing. I was coming to the city a lot when I was like 15, and I lived on Long Island at the time during my teenage years. I grew up in Brooklyn, but I lived on Long Island during my high school years. And I made it to the city every single time I could. Went to places like CB's, went to Max's, played at CB's in my 20s. Opening for the Ramones, for example.
Yeah.
So had a lot of great experiences working with people I really admired.
One thing I think that is really the enemy is apathy. You know, it seems like what also I'm getting at is this idea that music drives us to passions, drives us to emotions and strong emotions, and that we want to kind of move away from this apathetic. It seems like culturally we're going towards this apathy and a sense of disconnection. Mm-hmm. You want to improve that connection, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is that, you know, I find a lot of people who are from any generation, actually, are very much, music doesn't even though they say music moves them. I mean, I was in a place last night, upstate New York, having some dinner with some friends, and, there's a live band there, and they're a little older than me. And if that's possible, and they're like loving these songs, and they're saying that this band is playing, and the band was extremely good, but it was all, there was nothing post, let's say, 1985 that this band was playing. And and they claimed, you know, personally, they see themselves as very passionate about music, which is all wonderful and beautiful, but it's like at a certain point, they stopped really being passionate about new music.
Mm.
And I think that's something that emotionally, I'm always excited about hearing new music. And I'm always excited by an artist that moves me, if it's from the past or current. And yeah. I try to stay, I personally am excited by new stuff, you know, yeah. And I think that brings out a lot of emotion too.
So in terms of being excited by music and music throughout your life, if you could talk a little bit about what some of your biggest challenges have been and how music has either helped you through it or inspired your own musical progression.
Okay. I would say that I rely a lot on music personally. My two great artistic passions as far as being passive about them in terms of being an observer or a listener or a viewer, are film and music. And music more so. And I would say that I absolutely rely on, you know, it's the old story. You come home and you've had a tough day at work or whatever the case is, and you put on something that sounds supportive of your state. And music is a great tool for that, as is film.
Are there any specific bands or songs or genres that you associate with particular periods of your life for what you've been working through, working toward?
Well, I would say, it's more like artists. It's not so much genres or types of music. But some of the artists I just mentioned, I'll listen to different periods of Dylan, for example, which I think still holds up fantastically. Something from the Velvets, something from the Sex Pistols, but LCD Sound System. There's a million bands. As a matter of fact, the Flaming Lips are playing in New York soon at Governor's Island. So I listen to a lot of them. I don't specifically. Yeah, it's music is a comfort, but music is also a challenge. Music is something I like to be pushed by. I don't like to just be in a comfort zone, but the comfort zone factor does happen in life. Like when writing songs, for example. I don't ever think about genre or type of thing, or type of music, but rather everything's just on one palette. And that's how I think about when I listen to what I think about when I listen.
And also with Dylan, it makes me think of the songs of protest and the idea of music being a place for social justice and protest. He does a lot of songs like that seem to be pushing that wave. And then I understand you did a cover of the 1973 song, Impeach the President.
That's right.
Seems to have held up fairly uncannily well.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, we can do a 1973 cover and it be completely contemporary.
Yeah, it just seemed like it was coming out of this.
Yeah, we love the funk too. We recently covered Impeach the President, which was on vinyl on a single by. The Honey Drippers, which was a band in 1973 in the early 70s, not the Honey Drippers with Robert Plant, but rather the Honey Drippers, the funk band. And they did this fantastic song, which apparently is one of the most sampled songs for hip hop because the drums are sampled a lot on it. And our drummer, Alan, completely nailed it. So we didn't need to sample it, but it was, we love the funk. We absolutely do. And we do a lot of that. And Impeach the President is a very simple song, and I would say a very simple message, and I stand by it.
Yeah, and this B-side has just excerpts of dialogue from Trump with the music soundtrack. It's really just powerful to hear it in that context.
Yeah, thanks. And it's actually all outdated. At the time we figured, what worse could he say? And I'd love to update it, but it would be a constant thing. It'd be every day.
Yeah. It seems like ongoing. Yeah.
So that's protest music but it's funk and dance music at the same time. So it's, even though the chorus can't really be denied, Impeach the President, the groove is incredible. And, John and Alan, John, my bass player, and our bass player and Alan, our drummer, just laid down the groove and it was just like fantastic. And it was just the way we do things is like, I come in and suggest something or somebody else does. And we usually try it once and then we record it. So even if it's a cover, that's what we do. So funk is a big influence.
Yeah.
We want to nail genres, I guess, but it's funk is a huge thing for us. We all listen to tons of funk music, and especially me, I do, but I can't pull it off as well as my drummer and my bass player. So
Can I ask you, in terms of the relationship between music and activism and art and politics, do you have any advice for artists who are starting out, who are trying to figure out the best way to continue practicing their art while getting a message across? in terms of perhaps creating music or finding venues to play, what would you tell a young musician who wants to make a difference?
Well, I think the best advice in the world for anything is be yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, be true to yourself. And if you know, occasionally you'll hear somebody do a quote unquote political song. And of course, it's very easy right now, if you live in New York City, in this area, to, let's say, do an anti-Trump song or anti-whatever it is. That's easy to do, mm-hmm. because we're in New York City. We're generally going to agree.
Singing to the choir.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it tends to be something it's easy to jump on the bandwagon. But, you know, it's not necessarily always, you know, true to yourself to be writing a political song, let's say. Mm. So you have to, I think it's true to yourself. I think that's the most important thing. And I think that, you know, I certainly have no formula for success because I've very successfully avoided it.
Yeah.
And it's actually been very much my plan. It's not a joke. I've always said I don't want to make a living playing music.
Okay, so just to go kind of with the Labor Day celebration here, and the idea of making a living and supporting oneself as an artist, mm-hmm. how do you feel about the idea that so many artists are kind of falling into a pattern of taking any gig and not insisting on being paid for it?
Yeah.
What does that do for other artists who are trying to support themselves? How do you feel? I mean, I'm all for music being available and things being available for no cover charges and just accessible to everybody. But how do you feel about this sort of trend toward artists not insisting on being compensated?
And it's a huge trend. It's what's happening in New York City right now. It's what's happening in the country. But I mean, certainly in New York City, I can speak to it too. You know, I think, we'll speak in Labor Day terms. I think all work has worth. I think that, you know, let's put it this way. Sometimes there's not a salary in a place. I mean, I played a place regularly where there's not a salary called LIC Bar over in Long Island City on Vernon Boulevard. Mm-hmm. I play there regularly and, there's no salary there. There's a bucket that goes around. Now, that same responsibility you would feel by paying, let's say, a cover charge to walk into somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you should also feel when that bucket gets passed around.
Mm.
So basically, artists should try to support other artists and educate the community about the fact that, hey, if you're enjoying this music, you should show your enjoyment by helping to support.
And that should
this.
Absolutely be happening. That's the main point here, is that your work has worth. And if you've enjoyed this show and you see somebody working up there, playing their songs or doing whatever they're doing, you're entertained in some manner, or they're just working hard while you're having a beer,
mm.
you know, throw them a few bucks. And I don't like the model, you know, but the models have changed in both commercial music, you know, selling it, and also in performance music. And those things are a constant thing. But yeah, work has worth. And all of us out there who are enjoying the fruits of that labor should be supporting it in some manner. From the artist's point of view, I would say that you know, you're going to play where you're comfortable playing, where you think it's working, where you think you have an audience. Sometimes a free place, you have more of an audience. So it's always a trade-off, because sometimes you have a bunch of CDs or whatever you have, and you'll play in a place for free in order to sell, you know, 5 or 6 records or CDs. So it's a trade-off. So you have to decide on that. But work has worth, and your art is work.
One thread that I think is the individual responsibility to, and the influence that they have on others. You know, when we talk about in the show, we talk about the personal is political, and how our individual choices seem like they're isolated, but actually they're very much interconnected.
Yes.
And when we start to support the arts and we start to advocate for the arts, artists and labor of artists, then slowly it has a ripple effect that more and more people will start to advocate for and move for the labor movement for artists, you know?
Right. And I once again, though, it comes down to the commodity issue, and when people are selling, let's say they're you know, giving their stuff away on Bandcamp and all those things, we give all of our stuff away. Mm. You know why we do? Because we don't have to make a living at it. Mm. But the point is, when you start to give it away, you kind of lower the value of it too. Mm. So it's a give and take. It's pluses and minuses, I really should say, to that formula. And we live in an era where the whole music industry has changed over the past 30 years. And who is going to say, you know, you and I, Claire Vijay, you and I are going to say, well, you know, I can get this music for like, I can just listen to, I can just stream this. Why wouldn't I do that? I don't know these guys. Why wouldn't I just stream this? Mm-hmm. And we're all guilty of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't pay for every single thing. I try to, actually. Mm-hmm. But I don't pay for every single thing I listen to. But the art has value.
Yeah.
And if you're going to see a band, which I encourage all of you to do, you do live in New York City, one of the music capitals of the planet, and to see all kinds of music, solo artists, bands, whatever it may be, and genres of every single type. You know, you don't have to travel very far, no matter where you live in New York City, to find something you love. I mean, we're right here in Brooklyn. There's no shortage. To do that and not contribute in some manner, a couple of bucks, whatever it may be. If everyone did that, you'd help to support the artists and you help them be more creative and do things you're already enjoying.
One humorous thing that happened to me the other day was that I linked my website to the Google Analytics. And I found out what the search terms were.
Should that never people, do that.
Yeah, I just was curious.
What'd you get?
One of them was free VJ. And I didn't understand that for a moment. I was thinking to myself, God, everyone wants to get a VJ for free. You know, like they don't want to, they want to, you know.
Was it the letters? What is the, letters VJ?
No, free and then VIJ.
Your name.
Yeah, okay. My name, yeah.
Okay.
So I was thinking to myself, my first thought was, you know, VJs are giving them out for free. And then it took me a moment to think radio
keyword.
Keywords, radio free, and then VJ. But, you know, this being Radio Free Brooklyn, you know, right. They're picking free VJ. But I just funny, like all these double entendres that could be like free as in liberate or something like that. It's just hilarious how these mistaken keywords.
Hey, listen, Trump is trying to rein in Google, you know, so to only have good stories about him. So it'll be a very small... very small site.
I just feel like the natural reaction, the absurdism of the administration is to tune out and to fight against just completely tuning out, because, you know, we can't be neutral.
Right.
We can't be neutral in this, other way to take the side of the oppressor, you know? We have to make our voices heard and fight for those who are being marginalized, yeah?
Agreed. Apathy is the enemy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's such an important... note, and maybe we should do a song at this time. We're in about a halfway time. We can do a little bit of music and do a little bit of. Would you like to play something?
Sure. What do you want to hear, Vijay? What do you like?
I really like New Dark Ages, and from your album that people can find on Bandcamp.
Right. It's you can find it on Bandcamp. Just look up Rust Kickers. That's one word, and Bandcamp, and you'll find it. And it's once again to help bring down the work of all artists. We're giving it away, so it's there. I don't know if I can do this live, but we're going to find out. Usually have a full band behind me for this. Sort of and we talk about genres, and I don't know if this is going to come across, but I was very interested in playing some, I was listening to a lot of salsa music at the time, and so this kind of came out of that. It wasn't like I'm going to do a salsa song, but it was like... just the influence of what I was listening to at the time. So, yeah, we'll try it at this time of the morning.
Yeah.
So, New Dark Ages. Thank you. I lost the pick. That's not good. Hold on. We're going to continue. Here it is. And you know, that wouldn't be the first time. So this is New Dark Ages Part 2. In a mug. I'm trying to dig out of this hole that I dug. I brought my ragweed, my ironweed, your records, your CDs. Clean the crap off the window so we could see. I swear to Jesus H. Christ, this is the life for me. Is not that good this time of day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So one thing I want to lead into a story that in our pre-questions you revealed a little bit of, and just to lean to that, I think the heart, finding out what the heart is, such an amazing refrain, and finding out our moral compass, finding out what's important to us, and you revealed the story of a very pivotal moment in the second grade. If you tell that story.
Oh. Yeah. See, now I forget what I answered. Yeah. Pre-questions. I hate them.
Yeah.
Make it up as you go along.
Yeah. You can just.
Yeah. When I was in second grade, and I think this is uncommon in the world, this type of thing, but was a very life-changing story for me, and I it's a very small story in terms of. I was part of a group of kids that picked on a girl in class, in our grade. I'm not even sure if she was in my class that year, but she might have been in my class the year before. But she was like a girl that was picked on. And it's telling of a mob mentality. Mm. And it's the same kind of thing that happens from everything from bullying in a classroom to anything from a gang rape to a Trump rally. Mm. It's a mob mentality. Mm. And I was part of that when I was in second grade, first grade and second grade with this one particular girl. It wasn't like an all-consuming thing with me, but it was something I was part of. And we would just pick on this girl. We'd just make fun of her. And there was no reason to do that. It was just, and not that there would be a good reason for a second grader to pick on another second grader, but there was real, it was just like a thing that happened. And I was always uncomfortable with it then, and I remember it really distinctly. And one day, I was involved in a some kind of early morning art class thing or something like preschool, you know, before school, before class began. And so I was in school, and I was by myself, and I said that, and she was also involved in this thing, and we were waiting outside of the classroom in the hallway. I remember it distinctly in our elementary school, and I did the same thing I did in the group with the group. I said the same. I don't even remember what it was, but whatever insult that we had been launching at her, I also launched at her by myself. And she wound up and clocked me. I completely deserved it, you know? And it's something she couldn't do to a large group. But she took out exactly how she felt, 100% correctly, on me that day. And literally, I went to the nurse's office. I was crying and, you know, I'm a second grader. And never thought she did anything wrong. I mean, even then, I wasn't like, she hit me, you know? Oh, my God. I was like, I completely deserve this. And that was like a gargantuan life changer for me. And every time I see something like that, where a group, a mob, where people are picking on someone in a serious fashion and with kids. I work in a school district too. So I see it with kids, but it's much more concerning when you see it with adults, like at a Trump rally. That takes me back to that. And I put myself in that person's place, because what I felt when I got punched that day was not so much the punch, but rather this girl's really hurt. You know?
Yeah.
And I felt that then as a second grader. And I said, I'm never going to do this again. So I spent, I would say, you know, so right through now, but all certainly all through school, saying, could we knock this off? You know, let's not do this.
Yeah.
And it was a big life changer. It sounds small, but it was a huge life change.
It's such a big thing, you know? Yeah.
Bullying and social groups in children, teenagers, and young adults, especially with social media, bullying has become a huge problem and something that translates directly into the everyday experience of being a human being.
Yeah.
And I think with social media, it has lost its age group, you know, it has right. just blossomed into this horrible thing where adults are
presidents.
Everybody who makes a comment without thinking about it, who takes the first thing that they see and agree with as truth and starts to focus more on power than on truth. It becomes so easy to do that when our comments are just supported by other people who would rather rally than think.
Yeah, one thought that came to my mind last night as I was trying to fall asleep was these random thoughts that come at 1 a.m. And I'd been reading this book, Sync, which is about how order emerges from chaos, S-Y-N-C, like synchronous.
Sure. Uh-huh.
It talked about lightning bugs or fireflies. And how they sync up, you know, they're able to blink at the same time. And science has been exploring how they do this, how they're capable of doing this. And they understand that the firefly has an internal rhythm, and then it responds to a nearby firefly and syncs itself with that nearby firefly. It's the theory that's presented in this book. And I think that can be translated in the connection with human beings, that we have this internal sense of right and wrong, but then we sync up with the communities and we have that echo chamber we hear about, bubbles, that we're syncing up with small micro communities. And, you know, we have a responsibility to be true to our internal rhythm, you know?
But this can be a good thing, too.
Yeah, it's
not just pain that spreads. And
exactly.
I think we can sometimes lose hope or feel overwhelmed by the things we see around us that are negative, but we forget that we can blink positive.
Exactly. We can change it. Yeah.
It's the connection based on the positive rather than the negative, and I think that's a good thing. But I think it's very easy as I did in second grade, as adults do today, people sink into the negative all too often, unfortunately, and has such huge repercussions in the world, interpersonal relationships, whatever it may be.
Can you talk? I was really inspired by your focus on optimism in terms of those questions we asked you before.
Yeah.
But there were a few where you responded with the idea of optimism as its own thing, but also actively not being negative, I guess. So getting rid of the half glass empty, not just being neutral about it.
Well, I think we can speak completely selfishly and say that that's allows you to be creative, that allows you to do things we're not even talking about good in the world. Forget about that for one second. And but as far as your own personal growth and your own personal enjoyment of life, why be miserable? You know, I mean, it's a simple thing, really. The more positive you can be, the better you feel. So that's the selfish aspect of it. The bigger aspect is the fact that it makes everybody else feel better.
Yeah.
You know, doing some good in the world is a good thing, and looking for a positive. People also do good in the world and are very negative. You know, people are very angry, and so people attempt to do good in the world. And they can be doing that, and that's great. We need anger. Anger's a weapon, as people have said. You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's got to be something where you, positivism, optimism, I don't know what anybody wants to call it, but, is a mental health issue. And it keeps you grounded and healthy, and it allows you to do things. I mean, we can look at the world and we can be completely debilitated by it. You can look out there and see what's happening in the world politically. You can look at the streets of New York City. You can look at anywhere and get very depressed. Or you can see the positive things that are being done, the positive things that you can do, the positive things that the people that, are on the street or whatever the case is, the positive things in their lives, you know, all these kinds of things. You can see these things. And to have an outlook that's a little more optimistic is something to strive for. It's good for your own mental health, and it's good for the world.
So regular listeners of the show will know that I'm very much in the Buddhist philosophy, and I've interviewed a lot of Buddhist teachers, I've interviewed Buddhist poets. And one of the tensions in Buddhism for me, or my take on it, is that, you know, you're talking about selfishness, and, you know, I think that it's in our self-interest to be compassionate, and I would put in those terms that when we acknowledge that the everyone else is infinite, there's infinite living beings out there, and we're just one person that doesn't really even exist, actually. We're just an illusion in this net of different identities, and we realize that higher truth, then we can empower ourselves. We can feel that meaning and power in our life and become more and more of a amazing presence in this world, you know?
I agree. And our connections are really important. And I'm not particularly a spiritual person. However, I've studied Buddhism, and I've been in various places, and I'm familiar with lots of different philosophies just in general. I was with someone just last night, as a matter of fact, who was talking about how they knew someone who was walking down the street one day, and they had known this particular guru, actually. But they were walking down the street one day, and they had sort of a moment of enlightenment directly in front of the New York Public Library, as a matter of fact.
Good place for enlightenment.
There you go. They weren't in there. They were walking by it, but I guess maybe the inspiration of the building, the main branch there, is quite incredible. I don't know what it was. And they felt like they froze for more than a minute, which they obviously didn't do, but they felt that way. And they felt like they could see like beams of light that went out to every individual, not just from them, but from all of them to each other, like shooting out. And it was a moment of realization of the connectivity of all of us, and how spiritually or not, we're all connected. And we're all connected by a mutual interest of taking care of each other. It can be a selfish thing, taking care of each other, but that's in our genes, you know?
And it ties directly to Labor Day. In terms of collaboration. And I think what we were talking about before with being paid as musicians, there's also the option of collaborating with other individuals who are trying to start something. You know, I can support you and I can play here, and it's going to help you get business. It's going to help me get recognition. But there are all different ways to collaborate. And I think it can be difficult because it does take extra effort to start a collaboration. Mm-hmm. It takes networking and it takes energy that I think a lot of artists feel they don't have. But the importance of it to be connected to other artists and to realize that success is not a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
Correct. Well, it's like in the world of music, it's the creativity factor that interests me and the collaboration factor. I usually don't like playing, quote-unquote, by myself. I like playing with other musicians because it brings out other things. I like playing with people I've never played with before. That's always an adventure. And that's that connection of human beings and helping each other, too. Mm-hmm. And that's something I relish. We did a thing two years ago. Anyway, we did this experimental recording of improvisation, and it was just guitar players improvising, not in a jazz way, but rather in a kind of like ambient kind of noise way. And it was three core people starting these drones and all these things, and I would have people I never played with before come up and play with us. And so that collaborative effort, that human connection that binds us all, was happening there. And it's just that's something we have to remember on Labor Day too, because we're all in this together.
Yeah.
That also, on an artistic level, is interesting because it sort of reminds us that the process of creation is just as important as the product, that the process of drafting and writing itself is part of the goal, the aim. And I love the idea of creating music for the sake of the experience and taking the risk of not knowing what it's going to sound like and who knows what's going to happen and who knows how these things are going to fit together. But seeing that as a fun adventure rather than this might never get recorded.
Yeah.
Right. And that is actually the most important part about music to me. It's the making of it. It's like, well, you know, you put out a record or whatever. And years ago, I've been in bands that, you know, put out a whole bunch of stuff. But this particular thing with Finn and his Rust Kickers has just been a thing where we go into a recording space. And I usually come in with a very general sketch. And I'll play it for the rest of the band. Or they'll play me, some, you know, whatever the case may be. And we'll very briefly flesh it out. Nothing, it doesn't become codified. It doesn't become a thing that we do until after it's recorded. And then we have to relearn it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, we have to play this song now. But I mean, it's this the experience of the creation of it is as a team is what really, as fellow humans, is what really makes it interesting.
I really like the idea with collaboration, what it awakens in you and your process. Like other people, you see other people as being out there and, you know, being separate from you, but actually they kind of awaken some part of yourself that they resonate with. And you're able to, you know, talking about self-interest and you know, this term selfishness has such a negative connotation. Yeah. Self-interest I like better.
Yes,
because
I agree.
We have a limited to, you know, our bodies, our minds, but we can understand how that connects to the whole. And being
and
able
contributes.
To feel that, yeah, and contributes to the whole, that we're not separate on some level. It's a very dualistic idea. But the point is, what I was trying to say was that, how collaboration can awaken in us potentialities. And I like the language in your website. It says, it's Rust Kickers founded in 2014, or originally intended to be a one-off gig between old friends, and it quickly evolved into a genuine creative outlet. And I love that. It really captures what you were saying just now about how, and I like this one as well as an opportunity to make some noise. You know, I like that. Yeah. I really love that.
We got to make noise.
Yeah.
We all have to make some noise in the world, whether it be musically or artistically or hoisting a beer somewhere with friends or whatever it may be. But yeah, that was a big factor with us. We got together because a friend of ours who runs LIC Bar, as a matter of fact, books that, was talking to me and said, you have to play here. And I was like, I'm not in a band anymore. I don't want to do that. And anyway, through a long story, I eventually said yes. And I wanted to play only with people I had never played with before who were friends of mine. And I vaguely knew. That was once again, the creative process, right? And I played with Bill Hafner, who's our guitar player, I had never played with before, but I knew for very many years. We were in the same bands at different times when we were kids, you know, and stuff. But I always admired his playing, and he always admired my stuff. And so I asked him to play, and then I was going to get two other guys who were I'd never played with. And then I got, he said to me, so why don't we just play with two guys we absolutely love? Mm-hmm. And that was John Borkhardt and Alan Criscolo. And I said, well, let's see. It's only going to be for one gig, one time. And we got together. We sat down for a rehearsal. We played the songs that we had in common first, you know. And then I said, well, let's write some songs too. So we banged them out. And it was just like this magical. It was really magical. I mean, it's not necessarily magical for everyone who hears us. But it was magical for us. And that's all that really matters, you know.
Yeah.
We felt that... It was something we could do. And then we did this one gig. And then afterwards I met them because I framed the posters from the gig for them as kind of a memory thing, you know. And it was a packed out show and all this stuff. It was really nice. And I gave them the posters and they're like, what do you mean we're not playing anymore? I said, well yeah. No. And they said, we have to.
Yeah.
This was too fun.
Yeah. You know?
And this was too much of a connection. And this was too much of a collaborative effort that we just locked in together at common interest, once again, Labor Day, and we did it.
So great to hear about the joy, because joy in everything. We should bring that joy to all of our processes and find the joy, chase that joy, and continue to do that. And one thing that's interesting to me, the Rust Kickers, the term Rust Kickers. Tell us a little bit how you came up with that.
Well, I didn't. I had nothing to do with it. My guitar player, when I was suggesting that we get together and do this one gig,
mm-hmm.
I had said that, let's, you know, only one of us had been playing, you know, I hadn't played in a long time, but only one of us had been actively playing. And, I said, you know, let's kick the rust off and see what happens. And so my guitar player said it's the Rust Kickers.
Yeah, that's great.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah, it's funny how like sometimes
and
little
I hated
things.
It.
Yeah, something
and
little
I still
things
hate
like
it.
Ring with you. Yeah, you don't like it?
No,
I like it.
It's grown on me.
Yeah.
Know, but I'm still like the Rust Kickers. What's that? I hate that. I would never name a band that, but there you go. That's collaborative effort. We all have to sacrifice for the collaboration sometimes.
Good.
Well, the name seems to be working for you guys. So.
It is. It's a lot of fun. And that's the main thing, is that we have a lot of fun. We have people that come to see us all the time, which I'm shocked at. Very full houses. It's nice. It's fun. We just have a blast.
Well, I think it was really interesting to hear you say, we do this, we get together, we love it, even if the listeners don't. I thought that was interesting. And good to talk about, since you do have lots of people who come hear you play. So, but I feel like there's sort of an apathy in audiences sometimes too, when people sit down and hear music or listen to poetry, kind of listening for how polished something sounds, or coming in with expectations or something like that. When as an audience member, there's so much beauty to see something being worked out as it's happening. And to look and just see the artistic drive behind whatever is happening in the moment, instead of saying, oh, I liked that song and this song and this song, to kind of just see the whole experience, like work that a consumer of art.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the listening experience these days is a different game. It's something where you do expect something to be exactly as you've heard it. I mean, obviously. And it's kind of the life gets taken out of it in a certain degree. Creative force gets taken out of it. But I mean, I think there's plenty of people that do listen to it for creativity and spontaneity and all that. But yeah, I think audiences in general, you know, they're just used to hearing what they can hear on their Spotify or whatever they hear it on. And so when they see something live, they're like, this doesn't sound like the record.
You know?
And we actually are constantly reworking songs. We get bored very quickly. And so it's like even New Dark Ages, we've reworked pretty drastically and live. And we do that all the time, you know. A song that was you know, a country song one week is a ska song the next week. So,
So one thing that, you know, is very much a pet peeve of mine, or something that kind of angers me, is the idea of the consumer mentality just going along with that, is that in all things we think we're an expert. Mm-hmm. And the more we become an expert on things, the less we enjoy the piece or anything in life. We think, you know, things should be a certain way. We're so experienced. We're so knowledgeable. And it just really, you know, I think approaching things with a beginner's mind always, no matter how many, it helps so much with the enjoyment. You know, you're able to be alive in the moment and not have these rigid.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I mean, as a musician for many years and all the stuff, you know, plenty of people who are like, there's plenty of musicians out there who are, oh, that guitar player, he's not good. You know, or that I could do that. Yeah. Or I could do that better. Why didn't you do this? Mm-hmm. Whatever the case is. Everyone's an expert. You're exactly right. Everyone knows better. I was upstate yesterday, and there was some guy trying, and it was very, very windy on the Hudson River yesterday, and this guy was trying to bring his sailboat up to a dock. I don't even know what the terms are, because I'm nothing to do with boats. but anyway, he's trying to park the boat. You know?
Yeah.
And
makes sense to me.
Exactly. Right. See, now we're on the same page. And he's having a lot of trouble because of the wind. Now, obviously, his sails are in, he's under motor power, but still, the wind was incredible at that particular moment yesterday. And there's these guys, we're at a bar at a dock, you know, so we're just watching the water, the boats. But there's another table where this guy's like, and this guy has maybe been on, he got the sense that he's been on a boat a few times, but everyone's an expert. Hmm. Look at this idiot. He can't pull this thing up, you know? And everyone's an expert and everyone's a critic. And instead of just enjoying and living in the moment and experiencing the process.
Or going out and helping the guy get the boat in.
That's another idea. This guy knew so much, why wasn't he out there? I would have gone out there, except I probably would have sunk the boat. But, you know, I would have been no help to the guy. But there were other people out there actually helping him. But these guys sitting at the table drinking beers, like, oh, look at this guy. And that's what happens with music, too, sometimes. You see that in places where you play, where people are, you know, critical. And you have to tell you know who most of those people are? Most of those people are not New Yorkers. They're usually from Long Island or they're from somewhere else. You know, not to knock Long Islanders, but we're in Brooklyn here, so I'm safe, I think. But New York audiences, people who come out to see music, tend to be extremely responsive and do listen, you know?
Yeah. That's a good note to start to wrap up on. I wanted to, you know, implore listeners, as you're talking a little bit about the Labor Day and such, and the labor that we put into the show. So I want to have people definitely consider doing a donation to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform for our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So if you'd like to support our mission, you can continue bringing you quality community radio. We invite you to make a donation to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Radio Free Brooklyn is trying to get to Austin to present at South by Southwest in 2019. So please help. We're asking for help from our community of listeners. So you can go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/SXSW, which is the abbreviation for South by Southwest, and just, you know, quickly upvote Radio Free Brooklyn. Finally, teen after school program. Radio Free Brooklyn is proud to announce that we've been partially funded to start an after school program for local teens. And the grant only pays for so much, so we're looking to get additional funds to be able to help the next generation express and learn themselves through media and learning hands-on approach to journalism. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/afterschool. So we have a few more minutes. You know, any other closing thoughts?
Claire?
Well, I think that it would be great for everybody to choose one creative or inspirational thing today that they could do with somebody in their community, whatever that means. A lot of people have the day off, and I don't know if you're like me, that involves lots and lots of sleeping usually. But maybe if you've already put in an hour of your day to listen to us talk about creativity, maybe it would be a good day to start a creative project yourself.
Good plan. And I would say that let's remember Labor Day. And Labor Day, of course, this first Monday in September is created sort of as a diversion by the United States Congress because it's May Day everywhere else in the world, May 1st. However, you know, it's not just about barbecues and a day off. You have to remember people have died for your rights to a 40-hour work week and vacations and all those things. And don't let people take these things away in one fell swoop. Remember your history. Remember what you have has been fought and died for in many cases, and don't take it for granted.
Yeah, I mean, I think that remembering our interconnectivity, as we've been talking about this whole show, remember that we're part of the community, that being active participant, and that'll give us the joy of fully realizing our own ambitions or fully realizing our own life and our meaning of our life and be able to get a more fulfilled experience, find that joy. And that really comes from that support of our community, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Want to go out with a song?
Yeah.
This is our most recent single off of our new album is called, Leave You Nothing to Squander, and you can stream it, you can pick up a vinyl copy, you can do any of that stuff, just look up Russ Kicker's Bandcamp. But this is a vinyl single, and it's about William Blake, the visionary poet, and about his first vision and his effect on it. It's called On Peckham Rye, and this is also available on vinyl. Well, it's rare that I've found myself fumbling for words, though it seems they've gone out for the paper. And I seek insurrection just beyond the next curve, or an excuse for some moribund caper. Now the dark, it comes down, and the hammer, it rings, smothering song like a viper. And I still hear that swatter. Oh Lord, could it swing through a curse down on all passing pipers? Well, you left me alone on that vision-filled night, and for all I have seen, I have paid with my sight. Now my head carries angels, and swarms do they fly in